Blog Talk Radio.
And all access football exclusive.
Good evening and welcome to the first edition of New Era Radio. We're restarting this year after running for a couple months last year, and Eric Loomis will be joining us shortly. I am Matt Miller. I'll be your host for New Era Radio, where we will break down everything that you need to know about college football, the NFL draft, free agency, and more. We'll kind of give you a good rundown of everything as it relates to the NFL. One thing that we do want to mention is you can follow us at any time on Twitter. And it's going to be at New Era Radio. You can also follow us on Facebook if you want to get more information. That's a good way to get a hold of us there. Tonight we've got a special guest with David Fucillo from NinersNation.com. He'll be coming in and talking to us about the Michael Crabtree signing, which happened today, as well as some other things kind of as they happen that relate to the 49ers and kind of the rest of the NFC East, the NFC West. So we'll definitely be going there later this evening. Sorry about that. I think we're having some technical problems. We're going to go ahead and bring on Eric Loomis with us here shortly. He'll be our co-host. But everything should be up and running tonight. And one thing we're going to jump into is the news of the day, which seems to be that, you know, there's been some big news with wide receivers today.
Hey everybody, this is Daniel Moglion here from All Access Football, here with another NFL Draft Bible Player Spotlight. With us today is running back Ray Rice out of Rutgers. He was a freshman.
And sorry for those listening, we are having some technical problems as we re-navigate the dashboard after a couple months off. So hang in there with us and we'll get things figured out. We're still waiting for Eric Loomis to get on with us to co-host the show, but we'll be getting everything up and running shortly, so I do appreciate everyone hanging tight with us as we get stuff figured out. So if anyone is listening, please know we are having some technical problems, but we will be back as soon as possible. You got me, Matt? Yeah, I've got you. Hey, let's go live. Ready?
Yep.
All right, 3, 2, 1. And I apologize for any problems that we're having tonight. As I mentioned before, we're having a lot of trouble relearning this dashboard, which they decided to change in the last year. But I believe I've got Eric Loomis on the line with me now.
I'm here, Matt. It's good to be back broadcasting once again. I know, I guess they changed that dashboard about as much as you changed the front page of New Era Scouting. So I guess you got to relearn it and all that, but it's good to be back and glad we're up and running.
It is good to be back, and you know, we're only 5 minutes behind schedule, and for you, that's pretty good. So I think everyone,
I'm perpetually 5 minutes late for life, so it works out pretty well.
Well, we are fashionably late, but we are ready to roll. For those of you that missed the intro, you can follow us on Twitter and submit questions there if you'd like. The address is at New Era Radio. That's NEWERA. RADIO. So check us out over there and send your questions. You can also look us up on Facebook if you want to submit your question that way. But now that we've got the introductions out of the way, let's jump straight into the big news of the day, Eric. And that would be, finally, Michael Crabtree is in camp. He is a 49er with a 6-year, $32 million contract. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, it's about time, frankly. I'm still kind of surprised he held out as long as he did. I don't know, you said $32 million. I didn't see the specifics on it. Did he get more money than Darius Hayward Bay?
He did not. The contract came in right at the scale. You know, nothing was broken. He didn't get more than seven. Some people are actually saying he got less money, than where he could have been, what Buffalo gave at 11. But he definitely got less money than Raji got at 9 to Green Bay. So he didn't break the slotting by any means. I think the one good thing that Eugene Parker can say is that, you know, he did get him a six-year deal that voids the five, you know, if he just plays out of this world and becomes a Pro Bowler. So that's what they have to stand on.
Yeah, he kind of pretty much just wasted his first professional season for that 1 year. So I hope it's worth it. I don't expect him to contribute much in the next couple weeks. Maybe he comes in and he's a fast learner, but right now he's way behind the curve on a pretty good football team. So we'll see. It's always interesting, these holdouts and how long they go. I think we may be on the verge of them ending with a rookie cap staring us straight in the face in a couple of years. But, you know, having these holdouts go like this, it's not good for the team. It's not good for the player. It's something that maybe needs to be structured in the future, and I think we're probably going to be seeing that in the next couple of years.
I would definitely hope so. I know that's something that Roger Goodell, the NFL commissioner, has said over and over again, is that there needs to be a rookie wage scale. And, you know, if so, this wouldn't have happened. There wouldn't have been problems, and Crabtree, you know, would have been in camp in July when they basically offered him the same deal. But here's something you don't get to say every day. Thank you, MC Hammer, for getting this deal done, which is just mind-boggling. But, you know, he came in and got things done. So I'm, as a 49ers fan, I'm happy.
I'm sure you are. You're happy to be happy to have your top pick in camp. You know, it was getting to a point where, I know we have a guest on later to talk about the Niners. I was getting to a point where I was when we were reviewing notes for the show, I was going to ask him if he legitimately thought if Michael Crabtree was going to re-enter the draft. You know, I hadn't heard any rumblings. I don't get too much West Coast football news, kind of an East Coast guy, so I hadn't heard any rumblings if he was coming in. I'm happy for you and other Niners fans. I hope he can contribute. Like I said, I think he's probably way, way behind the curve and probably wasted a good portion, if not all, of his first professional season.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. As far as being behind the curve, they are saying that there's a chance he could play this weekend in a three-receiver set, possibly. But I just can't see how he would be in good enough shape for that to happen. But I guess you never know.
Playbook and, you know, game shape. The kid hasn't played a football game since, what, January? I mean,
right.
Yeah. A little bit, like I said, behind the curve. We'll see.
Yeah, and, I mean, no question, he's a talented player. He could have been the top player overall in last year's draft, arguably, but definitely talented. Any Big 12 football fan will attest to that. But, again, you know, when you miss the first four games of the season, it's definitely not going to help.
I think the basis of his problem was he was basing his contract negotiations on what Al Davis did. I mean, Al Davis is a crazy person. We all knew he was the best receiver in the draft. It doesn't mean Al Davis did it, and you can't base your complaints and your salary demands on what because Al Davis drafted someone he shouldn't have, and because we said, people like us, said he should have been the top receiver. You can't make contract demands based on that, and I think he learned that lesson.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm going to go ahead and make a prediction. Those of us who listen, you know, those people who listened last year know that, you know, this is my favorite thing to do. I still think Crabtree has a better rookie season than Hayward Bay.
Well, I mean,
statistically, much better.
Yeah, well, he doesn't have to deal with the circus in Oakland. I mean, and Michael Crabtree has hands attached to the end of his arms. He's not just really fast. So he's got two things up on Hayward Bay.
Absolutely. Well, let's go ahead and speaking of someone who may or may not have hands attached to the end of his arm, Braylon Edwards traded this morning from the Cleveland Browns to the New York Jets. I know some Browns fans who are really happy about this. They kind of think good riddance to Edwards and the stone hands that he's had. What do you think about the Jets picking up Edwards at this point in the season?
I think it makes the Jets a legitimate division title contender. I mean, you know, Brady's scuffling a little bit. Miami's out. Pennington, I think they're right up in it. You know, he's a good option for Sanchez. Mark Sanchez is, you know, been a solid rookie quarterback. You know, you're not going to get rookies lighting it up too often, but he's doing a serviceable job. You know, he's not hurting the team at this point, and this gives him just another option. They're kind of missing a marquee receiver. Braylon has had an issue with hands, in the past, but he's also shown that he can be a game-changing receiver at times. You know, did he need a change of scenery? I think there's 53 guys in Cleveland right now that need a change of scenery. But, you know, maybe it works out for him. It's a new start for him. I've always thought he's a pretty talented player who just, you know, it seemed like a mental block. And maybe the move to New York's good for him. Certainly going to a town like New York's probably not real good, the spotlight, to get over a thing like having a little case of the dropsies. But, you know, maybe he focuses a little harder. Maybe he plays a little harder in a winning environment. We'll see.
And we got a message on Twitter from Shake and Bake who said, Darius Hayward-Bey still has more names than catches in the NFL. Definitely thought that was worth throwing in there.
Absolutely true. We'll jump back here a little bit, but I did the ACC scouting for New Era last year, and there was two things I learned about Darius Hayward-Bey in watching Maryland games. One, that dude can run like a deer, and two, that dude couldn't catch a cold.
And it was well known. I think we were all surprised when he went seventh overall. But like you said, we jumped back a little bit there. Going back to Edwards, I think it's a good pickup for the Jets. Kind of like you said, with the way Mark Sanchez is playing, they seemed like they were one downfield threat away from really breaking that offense open. Now that they've got Edwards, he's not going to be consistent. I think they're going to see, 7 to 8 drops at least this year for the rest of the season. But he gives him a downfield threat. He gives him someone who can play, up in the red zone. So it's only going to help. And with the way their defense is playing, if the offense can give them 14 points a week, they're going to be a winner.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's just part of the mass exodus from Cleveland. I know we've got some Browns fans hanging around New Era, and it's tough to see. I'm a Steelers fan, and I miss the old Steelers and Browns rivalries when that was actually a game. They used to knock it. Piss out of each other twice a year, and even in the playoffs occasionally. It's sad to see. And maybe we'll touch on that a little bit later, but who do they have left there? I mean, I know Massaquoi asserted himself this past weekend, but it's just, are they just blow it up and start over? Because then, is Mangini that guy? A little bit off topic. Maybe we can get that a little bit later. Well, we have another wide receiver topic we want to discuss. This one was a little bit late breaking. Late this afternoon, Oklahoma State wide receiver the rest of the season. Improper conduct. Apparently he had some contact with a former NFL player, is my understanding of it, and didn't properly disclose this to the NCAA. Matt, what are your thoughts? I mean, this is...
I definitely, like you said, some kind of visit, went to the home maybe of a former NFL player. Maybe it was Deion Sanders. I know some people have said that. He didn't, let the NCAA know about it. They're kind of picky about these things. They're a little touchy about it. In my personal opinion, it's kind of crappy rule. He didn't do anything wrong. If you look at some of the things that have happened to Florida State or at Miami in the last 10 years, this is kind of, a ticky-tack to, actually suspend a player for. And for him to miss the entire year, this is his junior season, and what most of us think will be his last year, in Stillwater. Most of us think he's going to be, going into the NFL draft. So I think that's the big fallback from this. Does Bryant enter the NFL draft? Because he's not going to be playing at Stillwater anymore. So is it time for him to just not worry about classes and start thinking about workouts so that he can, make the jump to the next level?
I would say most likely. I don't think you're going to see him play another college football game unless – I know Oklahoma State's already appealing and trying to get him reinstated. Maybe he can get in later in the year. But if I'm Des Bryant, I think today I probably attended my last college class as well. He's a heck of a football player. He's a physically dominating receiver. He's going to be in the NFL. He's going to be a pretty good one. I think he's probably done with the college game. Is there a bigger joke of an organization than the NCAA? I mean, it's laughable. This kid gets suspended for the year for this. Reggie Bush's family lived in a multi-million-dollar house for years, and that's well known while he was at USC. And no one disputes that, but no one does anything to him retroactively or to that program. Blows my mind. I don't understand why they operate and hammer a kid like this. I could see him suspended a week, suspended 2 weeks, a little slap on the wrist, but he is just crushed for this, taking away an entire season from a player that special on a team that's not too bad. Seems a little stiff to me, especially when you look at, like you said, some of the allegations and things that have been proven from other schools and recent things like Reggie Bush that have been let slide. This one's kind of a head shaker to me.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely is. When you look at some of the rulings that the NCAA has made, I mean, I'm still in for Vince Young to get a Heisman Trophy retroactively. I mean, it's going to happen. I'm holding out hope.
I think
that's the only trophy he's going to be winning.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's he deserved it, maybe. That's a tough situation. It's harder to take away a Heisman Trophy, it is, I guess, than to please the rest of us who pay attention. So I think you'll probably never, ever see anything ever happen to Reggie Bush, no matter how many Yahoo reports break with signed leases and written affidavits and sworn confessions. Reggie Bush will never lose that trophy.
Yeah, it would be great. I'm not losing sleep over it, but I would be happy. Let me definitely say that. You know, one thing that I want to jump back, because we are going to have David Fucillo on in about 3 minutes from NinersNation.com. If you've got a second, hop over there and look at their site. They do a great job on top of the 49ers news. I know his website's getting blown up today because of Michael Crabtree news. One thing, kind of tying two of these together, Dez White, was he a better prospect than Michael Crabtree was last year at this time?
Oh, that's tough because we don't have a full body of work from Brian at this point. I think in terms of physical gifts, just natural physical God-given talents, probably. Crabtree has better hands, I think, but Dez Bryant has the ability to be a Terrell Owens-like physical force that, you know, he's tough to tackle. It's impossible to cover with a small DB. You know, you have to scheme towards him to stop him, and that was, Crabtree was a lot of the same way. Crabtree, I don't think, was as physically imposing.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Crabtree didn't have, you know, the big, you know, Anquan Boldin, Terrell Owens physique. Maybe a little more of a playmaker, especially his freshman and sophomore years when they used him a lot underneath, you know, on flip screens and ran him under. I definitely liked him, you know, in that offense. But Dez White is just something different. Like, I mean, as we mentioned, you know, as a Texas Longhorns fan, I'm very, very glad that he's done for the year, but it is sad to see, you know, a player not get to finish their college career. So definitely a sad moment, but also kind of a good one also.
A little bittersweet for you, I'm sure. I know once they come into Austin, I'm sure you'll be terribly broken up that he's not there.
Yeah, it's going to be sad, but I'm definitely looking forward to it because Oklahoma State, it was a very good team. They opened the year top 10. I'm not sure exactly the number, maybe 7 overall. And they've definitely fallen off, but there is some talent there. One guy that we're going to talk about a little bit later tonight, Russell Okung, their left tackle, who's really going to have to step it up now. So Zach Robinson, the running game, they've been beat up a lot early this year. But it's a talented team. Definitely could be a spoiler, you know, against maybe Texas, hopefully not, maybe Oklahoma. Or, you know, if they play some of those teams in the North, they could be an upset special. But without Dez White, there's just not much going on there without him in the lineup. So it's definitely going to be interesting. But we are going to take a short break, and then we will be back with David Fucillo from NinersNation.com. So stay with us. We'll be back in a couple minutes. Back at New Era Radio. This is your host, Matt Miller, alongside Eric Loomis, who will be bringing you college football, NFL draft, and National Football League news every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 2:30. We've got a special guest tonight with us, straight from the West Coast, right out of San Francisco. We've got David Fucillo from NinersNation.com. David, are you with us?
I am. Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Okay, good.
You, David.
I wasn't sure.
Well, David, it's great to have you on our inaugural 2009 version of New Era Radio. As everyone knows, I'm a huge 49ers fan, which means I'm a big fan of your website and the work that you guys do at NinersNation.com. As I was saying earlier, I'm sure your website traffic is going through the roof today with the news that Michael Crabtree has signed a 6-year, $32 million contract with the 49ers. How crazy has your life been today?
It's been the last 24 hours. Ever since the whole MC Hammer business kind of came down, it's just been, it's gone from crazy to bizarre to surreal.
And how many times in your life did you think you would get to say that sentence, the MC Hammer News?
I don't think I could have possibly thought of this if I mean, it might very well be the very last thing I possibly could have thought of.
But, you know, as 49er fans, and I think as fans of the NFL, we're all happy that this happened. You know, we all realize that Crabtree needed to get in camp, that what was happening was bad for the NFL. So we're all happy to see him there. What's the feeling in the Bay Area? How happy are fans?
I mean, over the last couple of days, people, you know, I mean, prior to the last day, people were getting a little annoyed with the whole thing and blaming everybody from Crabtree to Parker to Deion Sanders to whoever. But I think now people are pretty accepting of it. I mean, there's still a few people that really don't like Michael Crabtree, but, you know, that's going to be the case no matter what. And so I think people are just excited, especially, I mean, I think it helps also the 49ers are playing well, and I think that makes it, you know, even more exciting just because they're playing well without him. Imagine what they could do with him.
Yeah, David, and, you know, that's a very good point. That brings us on to our next topic. Did you, in your wildest dreams when this season started, picture a 49ers team that's off to this hot of a start without Michael Crabtree?
The way they're playing, I definitely didn't predict. I did think they would. I actually had them down at 3-1. I had them way back in the offseason. I did a thing with another writer at the site, kind of, you know, doing a really early projection. This was before training camp. Looking at the schedule, and I had I went with the road upset in Arizona, or no, the losing at Arizona, beat Seattle at home, I did have the schedule pretty much like this, I think. But not nearly this dominant.
It's been one of the surprises of the league so far this season. I don't think, you know, you often get teams like that where the writers and the guys who are around the team every day know that something special maybe is going on, and the general fans, like most of us, don't know what's coming. But to see a team like this, you know, get up off the mat under Mike Singletary, who is just fantastic to watch on the sidelines, you know, you got to love a coach with that kind of emotion and passion, and he's got the players playing with it, and it's definitely good to see.
Yeah, no, that's probably the best part about it is the fact that Mike Singletary is such a good guy, and, you know, it's easy to root for him, and for him to have the kind of success he's having, it was just, you know, it's one of the things where it's like good things happen to good people and just, you know, proof that his way works.
Do we have Matt? Matt, you back with us still? Hello? Apparently we don't still have Matt.
Okay.
That's all right.
I was saying into my phone, which was not turned on. We saw with Singletary last year, you know, he kind of hurt some feelings. I think he, you know, we know he made Vernon Davis mad. We know we got under the skin of some players. But this year, you know, after the offseason, they come in, you know, they're running hills every day just to get to the practice field. And people are buying into this system. I don't want to jump the gun too much, but, you know, this is what we used to hear about the Patriots, is people bought in. I think if the 49ers can bring in some veterans, you know, we could definitely see this become a market improvement instead of, you know, maybe a mirage at 3-1. David, what do you think about that?
Well, I definitely agree with you that this is, you know, they've got something they can build on. I think with the last year, I don't even know if it's necessarily getting under people's skin, at least on the team. I mean, nationally people were kind of making, you know, joking about the whole pulling his pants down and taking Vernon Davis off the field and all that. But, using Vernon Davis as an example, I mean, Davis is, you know, an immensely talented player who's just never really reached that potential, but I think it was one where he just kind of needed a kick in the butt, and Singletary is not, you know, wasn't going to take any grief, and Vernon Davis needs that disciplinarian figure, and Mike Nolan was not that kind of figure. So I think having Singletary there to do that really, I mean, has lit a fire under him, and I think the team's bought into this since last year, and even before, you know, the hills in the training camp, because the difference between Mike Singletary and most any other coach in the NFL is that he's achieved more at this point in his life than any 49er could ever dream to achieve. And they know he's legit. He's a Hall of Fame linebacker. He's won a Super Bowl. He's done everything there is to do in the NFL. And so they know he's not just, you know, saying, you know, it's not just words.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. He does bring a level of credibility into the locker room. And, you know, I think, you know, like you said, some of those younger guys that didn't really buy into Mike Nolan, maybe they see, you know what, this might not be fun and it might be hard work, but this guy clearly knows what he's doing. And, he, you know, he's been to the top of the mountain, and if we follow him, he can get us there.
Well, yeah, and I think also if they do end up having, you know, a successful year this year, say they win the division or, you know, win 9 or 10 games or whatever, I think it's kind of, you know, a domino effect where it just, or, you know, or whatever, you know, rolling down a hill, snowball going down a hill, it just picks up steam and you just keep getting momentum and people are going to see, okay, maybe, you know, initially, even you know, there, I'm sure there are a couple people on the team that were not thrilled with a lot of this, but I think everybody's going to be have bought in, and I think that that'll pay off, particularly come free agency time. I think, you know, San Francisco could become, you know, another a choice destination again.
I mean, I think we all hope that would happen, you know, but until the, you know, until the things with the stadium get cleared up, which is another thing that we definitely want to talk to you about, until there's a stadium plan in place, I don't know if it's going to be the free agent mecca that it could have been in the late 90s, but being out there, being connected to things, what are the chances that a new stadium is coming either in Santa Clara or in San Francisco?
Well, I think, they're going in the right direction. I had a chance to sit to actually interview Jed York over the summer, and a good chunk of that was about stadium stuff. And, I mean, basically, they've got a plan in place. It's going to be voted on down in Santa Clara in next March. And if they can get approval on that, they can, I mean, they're thinking 2013 or so, give or take, you know. I mean, obviously, until there's actually, you know, construction taking place, you know, can't really believe anything you hear. But they have a plan. It's now just a matter of executing the plan.
Well, you know, David, that's promising to hear. Certainly, everyone likes to see, you know, storied franchises get their stadiums and keep fans happy. I'm going to shift gears here a little bit. At the heart of what myself and what Matt like to do is the NFL draft. That's what we're about. That's what gets us into this. That's why we get up on Saturday and Sunday mornings to watch these games. Switching gears to that direction, if you had to project, you know, to next April, looking at the 49ers right now, I know it's early in the season, but can you give us, you know, where some of the weaknesses of the team are? What needs to be addressed in the draft?
They definitely need some help on the offensive line. Singletary has kind of been talking, you know, that when they've been discussing the performances, he's quick to note out, you know, the centers and tackles are doing okay, but they need some help at guard. I know David Bass is a free agent after this year, so I think they'll be looking to replace him. They've got Chylo Rochal, who's a second-year player, and, I mean, obviously he's going through growing pains as a player, and so that, you know, hopefully he can turn around, but I think they're looking for at least one guard. On offense, I mean, if Crabtree hadn't signed, obviously they'd probably be looking for a wide receiver, but I think otherwise, I mean, the skill positions, quarterback will always be a question mark at this point, but I think that will depend on what they think of Nate Davis. So, I mean, at this point, I would see them taking a quarterback no earlier than the third or fourth round at best. But that's one thing I just don't know how they feel about Nate Davis after, you know, seeing as he's probably not going to play at all this year.
Right. And those are two words that get me excited really quickly. Nate Davis. I was a huge fan of his last year. Was singing his praises all off season and, you know, trying to get the hype train rolling. I was so happy when the 49ers picked him up, but I was glad to hear you mention that. He had a great preseason, and I definitely agree with you. There's not the urgent need to draft a quarterback in the first or second round. Another thing that I want to add to what David was saying is, you know, the 49ers have two first-round picks because they get Carolina as the first-round pick. So it's very likely that they could be picking in the top five because Carolina is horrible this year, and they're only going to get one.
Yeah, we like that.
We definitely, you know, I say we, the 49ers are definitely going to have, you know, a top 7 or top 10 pick. And as well as they're playing this year, it's hard to look at one position and say, okay, we've got to upgrade here. You know, it's not like the Rams or the Browns where you can point to three or four positions. They're definitely going to be able to maybe take the best player available.
Yeah, no, that I agree there. And having that second first-round pick, if there is, you know, one guy they do decide they really want to target, they conceivably, you know, it's a lot easier to move up when you've got, you know, some picks to work with. I don't see them moving up. I mean, I'm curious to see what kind of impact players are there, you know, whatever that Panthers pick is going to be. But, I mean, you're right. The 49ers don't have a whole lot of major holes, but they do have, like, for instance, Abreu Franklin has been playing well, but he's not that traditional nose tackle that'll, you know, they can occupy half the field. And so, I mean, a guy like, you know, Mount Cody down in, was it Alabama? Or who knows, you know, I mean, again, it is the long way until the draft, but, I mean, a guy like that, I mean, you know, you could, you know, a lot of the good teams, you know, your Steelers and your the Steelers with Casey Hampton and the Patriots, you know, they had that big guy to occupy the middle of the 3-4 for the next, you know, decade.
Yeah, Casey Hampton is a rock. That dude makes the defense go.
Yeah. And one name, David, to mention to you for 49er fans to get excited about is, and I'm going to butcher his first name, but Ndamukong Suh, the defensive tackle from Nebraska, if you get a chance tomorrow night on ESPN, check out Nebraska versus Missouri and watch Suh, number 93 on the D-line, is just an amazing player to watch. As a defensive tackle, he has 6 passes defensed already this year, which is just a ridiculous stat. But he's one of my favorite players and someone that I know Eric and I are going to talk about later this evening. But keep an eye on him tomorrow night if you get a chance.
Interesting. I'll have to check that out.
All right. Well, David, we appreciate you coming on with us. Hopefully this can be a repeat segment, and hopefully you'll be our good luck charm and the 49ers will keep winning. If that's the case, we're going to have you back every Wednesday. But we do.
Yeah.
Time. And hopefully we'll talk to you next week, David.
Sounds like a plan.
All right. All right, and that was David Cuchillo from NinersNation.com. So after the show tonight or during, if you've got some free time, go over there and check things out to keep up on the latest news about Michael Crabtree, the Frank Gore injury, any 49ers news that you could ever need. Check those guys out. They do a great job.
That's one thing I forgot to ask, Matt. What's the latest status on Gore? Should have asked David, but what do you got on that?
I think what everyone's saying is another 2 weeks.
Okay.
Clint Coffey, the rookie out of Alabama, a guy who I know we talked a lot about last year before the draft, is a capable runner. He stepped in and did well last week against, you know, probably the best, or excuse me, 2 weeks ago, against probably the best running defense in the NFL with the Vikings, and played well this weekend against the Rams, as you would expect. But I'm excited about Glenn Coffey. I think he's a good number two back, and he's, you know, definitely going to get enough carries over the next 2 weeks. So that's
yeah, he's a solid player.
Yeah, absolutely. And the schedule's easy. We've got a very winnable game this weekend, and then a bye next. So things are looking good for the 49ers.
All right, Matt. Well, why don't we take a break and we'll come back. We'll start breaking down some NFL draft prospects for the upcoming 2010 draft.
All right. That sounds great, guys. We will be back in just a few short minutes. And we are back with New Air Radio. Sorry for the commercials there. I don't know what we've got going on the dashboard tonight, but those commercials are wonderful.
These commercials are dominating you.
They absolutely are. I think between now and next Wednesday, we're gonna reload some New Era specific commercials so that you don't get the ticking clock in the background for 30 seconds. Either way, it's week one, and just like any NFL team, we're definitely shaking the dust off tonight. No preseason for us. But we're going to jump right into some of the hot questions from the week. We took questions from Facebook, from Twitter, from our New Era Scouting Forum and compiled them all together. And we've got a good group of questions to come at you with tonight. So, Eric, you want to take the first one?
Well, I know that we had a question from old Parker on the board, wanting to know about some of the top tackles in this year's draft. And I thought that would be a good topic to get into quick. I know we can rattle some off, and then maybe do answer this one, and then you know, see what else we got. Maybe break down some of our top prospects. We can get started with the tackles though, because I know a couple of them are going to make an appearance in our top 10 when we get to that segment a little bit later. Matt, why don't you start us off? Why don't you give us your thoughts on a player like Trent Williams?
Williams is kind of an enigma to me. I know that our friend Dan Kadar at MockingTheDraft.com has said Williams is his number one tackle this preseason, and that's something that I disagree on. Williams has not played well early in the season. He's a guy who played right tackle for two years, and then has moved to left tackle and just has not looked good. But the entire Oklahoma offense has been out of sync. Even when Sam Bradford was in the lineup, Williams is just not someone I like. I think he's slow-footed at 6'5". He's a run 320 pounds. He did run well during the summer. He ran a 5.340, but it doesn't translate well to agility. His bucket steps are very slow. He short arms players at times. He's not real aggressive. He's looked good at times in the running game, so it almost seems like it's a mentality when he's pass blocking. But for someone to consider him a top 10 pick, which he's definitely being evaluated as one right now, but I can't see Williams being a top 10 guy once we have some underclassmen enter and once we're able to take a look at him at the Senior Bowl and then again at the Combine.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think looking at him right now, he's going to project more as a right tackle prospect, and it's hard to draft a right tackle in the top 10. Unless your quarterback's left-handed, obviously, but you know, and I think I agree with you a little bit of slow-footed. His footwork could use some improvement. You know, he's looked off. Oklahoma's looked off since the kickoff of week one. And obviously, losing Bradford didn't help the offense. But I agree with you. He's probably a right tackle. We're going to save the main target at tackle for when we get into our top 10 breakdown. Right now, though, just listing off a couple of other tackles we like. And maybe the guys we can get into, you know, as the season progresses a little bit when we get some further projections laid out and further rankings. Other guys we like to tackle, though, I mean, you got to look at Selvish Capers from West Virginia. You know, he's paving the way for Noel Devine down there. And that offense doesn't seem to have lost too much. You know, no Pat White, no Steve Slayton, but that offensive line keeps blocking well. A player like Cyron Block out of LSU, he's a pretty good-sized man. You know, right tackle, maybe left tackle. Kind of hard to say right now. And then a player I'm very familiar with myself, of course, Sam Young from Notre Dame, who is just an absolute house of a man at 6'8", 220. I actually stood next to him briefly during the players' walk at opening weekend for Notre Dame, and he is every bit of 6'8". I came up to the middle of his sternum when I was standing next to him. He is a big boy, and he's more of a right tackle. It's the position he's been most comfortable in. He played it all through high school. He's played it 95% of the time at Notre Dame. So, again, he's probably a second, late first, early second-round guy right now, but he's playing with this newfound fire this year. He's taunting guys. He's getting you know, roughing penalties and stuff, and that's something that we haven't seen from Sam Young. That's been missing from his game.
Now, you're only like 5'4", though, right? So, coming mid-sternum, that's a huge accomplishment.
I'm 5'8 on the best of days.
I have this theory that all Notre Dame fans are secretly under 5'6". So I just
well, we want to be like a leprechaun, so it, you know, we actually shrink ourselves from a young age.
Right, it's all the alcohol. It has to be.
That's probably it. Definitely stunts the growth. It's yeah. Well.
Well, speaking of some of your favorite players, we'll segue right into Mr. Tim Tebow from the Florida Gators. May not play this weekend against LSU in LSU, which is a huge game. What are your thoughts on Tim Tebow for this weekend and then Tebow as an NFL prospect? I know everyone's interested to hear that.
Well, let's start with this weekend. I'm going to preface this entire conversation by saying that I absolutely cannot stand the way the media goes about this kid. I can't stand the way that he is just glorified and almost deified by the folks over up in Bristol. But at the same time, it's hard to argue, and I can honestly say that he has probably been the best college football player I've ever seen. And anybody who knows me knows it tears me up inside to actually say those words out loud. But he absolutely is the best college football player I've ever seen. Now, as for this weekend, he's going to play. He's going to play, and I don't necessarily agree with it. I mean, we saw the kid vomiting on the sidelines. They say flu. I say that's a pretty serious concussion when it makes you sick. I know as of yesterday, I think I read that he was having trouble focusing his eyes to read, and yet today he was practicing, although not cleared to play in the game. It's either some fantastic gamesmanship by Urban Meyer, you know, making LSU think, is he playing, is he not playing, and then he's not going to come out, but I think he's going to play. I think they're not going to announce it until Saturday morning, and then Timmy Hero is going to take the field Saturday.
I hope he gives the no one's going to play harder than me for the rest of the season speech, because
I kind of wanted to see him give a speech when he was all messed up after the Kentucky game. And by the way, that was an absolute shot he took.
That was the shot from the Kentucky linebacker was a shot.
The shot from the Kentucky linebacker would have killed most normal-sized men. And then to ding your head off a lineman like that, he was just rocked. That's what makes me nervous about him going in there is, you know, scouts will disagree, and I'll get into a moment about where I see him in the NFL. Scouts will disagree about where he's going to play in the NFL, but the bottom line is he has an NFL future. And I know it's a big game, and it's his senior year, and Florida's trying to defend the national title, but, I mean, is he going to be healthy? You know, are they going to clear him? If he's cleared, is it the right thing to clear him, or are we just clearing him because it's a big game?
Yeah, that's definitely a good question. As someone who's had 5 or 6 concussions himself, it's not easy to come back from. And each time you have one, it gets harder to recover. That recovery time gets slower. It's just horrible. All I could think of when I saw that was the episode of The Office where Dwight gets in the car wreck and then throws a bullet into the car.
He was wrong. I mean, I don't terribly enjoy the Tim Tebow coverage, and even I felt bad after that hit. That was some absolute punishment he took.
But I think anyone who's ever had to take a shot like that definitely felt for him as another human being, you know, putting aside all your anti-Tim Tebow thoughts, you know. So on the record, we hope, you know, we wish him nothing but well. Getting back on the draft topic, though, how do you see Tebow as an NFL player? Now, notice I don't say NFL quarterback because I'm not sold on him being a passer at the next level. What do you think of him as a National Football player?
I hope he can catch. He would make an absolutely dominant tight end if he can catch. He's going to have to learn how to block too. But if he can catch naturally, split him out, put the football in his hands and make people try to tackle him. This running QB shtick, it's not going to work in the NFL unless your offense is going to be 95% wildcat. We saw Pat White get drafted for that reason. It hasn't really panned out as such yet. But I don't think he can run an NFL offense unless Urban Meyer goes with him. I don't think he runs an NFL offense from the quarterback position. Like I said, I hope he can catch, and I hope we can teach him how to block.
Yeah, absolutely. There's already been talk about the Jacksonville Jaguars, you know, wanting Tim Tebow just to fill seats in the stadium. And like you said, I hope he can catch, and I hope he's willing to block because he is not a quarterback to the next level. You know, that's always kind of been my area of expertise is, you know, scouting the quarterbacks, and I'm here to tell you Tim Tebow is not quarterback at the next level. The arm is too slow. It's not strong enough. He has a massive hitch in his delivery. The accuracy is unimpressive. I've never seen anything from him as a quarterback that I liked. You know, going on that alone, he wouldn't be drafted. But thankfully, he's a good athlete. Someone that you could, you know, push.
Fantastic athlete.
I mean, he really is. But you could see him playing fullback. You could see him being an H-back, kind of like a Chris Cooley. Where you move him around and get the matchup, but just definitely not a quarterback.
No, his footwork is well below substandard. Like you said, that hitch in his delivery makes my golf swing look smooth, and if you've ever played golf with me, you know that's not true. It's slow. His arm, the time from when the ball comes up to when the time leaves his hand is very slow. NFL DBs have a field day with his passes. Now, of course, we say all this. Someone's going to give him a shot.
Yeah, unfortunately, someone will. And, you know, hopefully whomever drafts him, because it will probably be in the first round, hopefully they draft him and let him know, okay, we're going to give you a shot at quarterback. And if it doesn't work, we're moving you to tight end. You know, because there have been guys who thought they were a quarterback. I don't know if you'll remember Eric Crouch, you know, from Nebraska, was drafted by the Rams. They wanted to move him to receiver. He said, no, I'm a quarterback, and he got cut. So hopefully, you know, Tebow is, if he wants to play in the NFL, hopefully he's open-minded enough to realize that it's going to be at another position.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. He's a special athlete, and Lord knows I don't want to try to tackle him, and I don't think many DBs in the NFL could match up with him. So I think he can find a way to get a ball in his hands, but it's not going to be with him taking it from a center.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree with you there. That's a very good point. Kind of moving on to another big topic of the day, something that has been brought up a lot on our forum and on ESPN Radio and other places. The University of Oregon has kind of almost reinstated LeGarrette Blount, a player we had as a second-round prospect at running back before the season. Opening week against Boise State, he goes off his meds, punches a player, almost runs into the stands. And now it looks like he's going to be back on the team. Do you think this is kind of a snap reaction to the fact that Oregon has a chance to win the Pac-10?
I don't know. For the record, what Blunt did was very stupid. He deserved to be sat down for a while for punching the Boise player. He deserved to be sat down for a while, although the Boise player might have had it coming. That dude was he was asking for it. Now, lots of players talk during games and they ask for it. That dude kind of went after Blunt post-game and was looking to rub it in his face. Maybe he should have reacted differently. I don't blame him that much for the punch, but I can understand that if you throw that punch, you got to sit down. The problem with this all started was when LeGarrette Blount went all Ron Artest and tried to fight the police officers and the fans and his teammates and the mayor of Boise. He went after anything that was in front of him. That's where the problem starts, and that's where I could see him being sat down for a little while longer. I think Oregon, you know, maybe he's been repentant. Maybe he's been going to class and being a good student and helping out with practice. I don't know what he's been doing that has all of a sudden gone from Oregon shunning him to them saying, yeah, he's good to go. I'm not close enough to that program to understand it. I don't have a problem with him coming back if you know, if he's going to behave himself. I thought that the season was a little bit too stiff to begin with. Like I said, I thought the Boise player was asking for it, which in no way validates what Blount did. I'm not trying to say that. But, you know, my problem was with when he went after the fans and the cops and all that. That's where he needed to get a serious talking to and to get it sat down. And maybe he's learned his lesson. I don't know.
Yeah, and you hope that he has because, you know, as I mentioned, he's a very promising player. We had him ranked as a second-round prospect before the season. And, you know, big player, very strong runner, very fast. It definitely looks like he could be a running back at the next level, kind of a Jamal Lewis type, maybe even a LaRon McClain. Maybe you see him a fullback. But a lot of talent. You just you wonder how much this and previous transgressions are going to hurt his draft stock.
Yeah, correct me if I'm wrong, but he'd had some previous transgressions at the University of Oregon, had he not?
Yeah, he has had some run-ins before the season. I believe at the end of last year, that's something we have to get into more on a later date, but the character's definitely sketchy.
Yeah, that's a big concern for NFL teams, like you said. But, you know, I'm interested to see maybe he comes back, maybe he's a changed man, or maybe, you know, he's the same guy and he punches somebody else and we get another great moment on ESPN. You know, you can never tell what is going to go on with something like that. So it might be fun. Either way, you know, we're going to get a solid NFL running back prospect, or maybe he's going to blow up again.
Now, one question for you before we switch topics. If Blount had punched Brett Favre, would ESPN just devote a new channel to that? How would that work?
If Blount had punched Tim Tebow, the channel would have imploded.
There we go. Now, if we could get Tim Tebow and Brett Favre to fight, much like
if we could get them on the same program at the same time, ESPN might actually implode.
I think the people at Deadspin are taking notes right now, trying to make this happen. Speaking of implosions, we'll jump on back.
Hell of a segue there.
Thank you. You know, it's talent. This is natural, and you ruined it. But you know, speaking of implosions, here we go again. The Cleveland Browns. Are they the worst team in football? Or
absolutely.
They're terrible. There's no other way around it.
Yeah, that's an absolute mess. Like I said, when we were talking about Braylon Edwards, you know, maybe Braylon needed a change of scenery. There were 52 other dudes in that locker room today when Braylon got traded, and that probably went, damn it, why not me?
Yeah, is there a player to be named later? You know?
Yeah. It's an absolute mess of a situation, and it starts at the top. I wasn't a fan of Mangini in New York. I have no concept as to why Cleveland hired him, other than that they're the worst organization maybe in the NFL and possibly in professional sports, this side of the Pittsburgh Pirates. I just don't understand why you hire that guy.
You know, I don't either. The Bill Belichick tree, you know, it sounds great. Belichick's a hell of a coach. You know, hands down, I'm a follower. I'm drinking the Kool-Aid. But his assistants haven't done well. You know, being a Notre Dame fan, you know Charlie Weiss hasn't been that great.
I've tried to fire Charlie Weiss six times myself.
And cut Ben Roethlisberger at least three times.
I've cut Ben Roethlisberger a lot of times, but that's another topic for another time. Yeah, the Belichick coaching tree, Romeo Cannell's, he's out of coaching. Charlie Weiss is very much on the hot seat at Notre Dame. You know, Mangini, he's doing what he's doing. Obviously, Josh McDaniels didn't land with a lot of good overtones in Denver, even though they're playing well for the time being. But you know what? Mangini started hot in New York, too.
Yeah, that's true. The Mad Genius label was applied early on and didn't last all but two seasons. So, you know, definitely some snap judgments.
Let me ask you this, Matt, and I know it's something Al Davis would do, but can you possibly, unless you're the Oakland Raiders, fire a head coach you just hired mid-season?
It would definitely be unprecedented. Yeah, if anyone was going to do it, it would be the Raiders. You know, we know that, but their coach might be going to prison soon.
Exactly.
There's
that's
definitely
awesome.
A possibility of that. I don't know if Mangini could be fired during the season. If I remember correctly, and we might have to get one of our resident Browns experts on, he was hired before they hired GM George Kokonis. So Mangini was kind of put in place first. So you really wonder, you know, is Randy Lerner gonna make a move? Would he pull the plug? Or, you know, is he looking at his roster and saying, okay, I need to give this guy some time to turn over the roster, which they've done. I mean, I believe they've already cut 30 players who were on the roster last year. And they're definitely rebuilding. You know, they have Joe Thomas at left tackle. There's a player to build around. They have Alex Mack at center, I believe. There's a player that they can build around. And Sean Rogers at nose tackle is a phenomenal player. But, you know, when you look at a 53-man roster and you can only point out three players to build around, that's not a good sign.
Yeah, that's and they probably should just blow it up and start over. And my biggest problem with the way this whole situation has unfolded is, one, I'm a gigantic Notre Dame fan, and two, my man crush for Brady Quinn is roughly the size of Metro Cleveland. So, you know, seeing the way that Mangini handled that situation to start the season, it wasn't really something that I was impressed with. You know, to come in and not name a starting quarterback is going to undermine your team. Now, I understand maybe first preseason game or two, you know, it's an open competition, but then you got to pick one guy and you got to get behind him. So that way your team can rally around him, number one. And number two, he can take all the reps with the first team. Brady Quinn took reps for 2 days before week one.
It definitely seems like Mangini has kept him under the bus, you know, since he showed up there. And I was a Brady Quinn fan when he was in college. I definitely think the Raiders made the wrong decision in drafting Jamarcus Russell instead of Brady Quinn. Like you said, that's another topic for another time. But I've always been a fan of Brady Quinn. And, you know, the guy has started so few games and taken so few reps, you know, with the first team. It just seems like he would be better off in another situation. You know, maybe it's like a Drew Brees. You go to New Orleans and you become this all-pro player. You know, when he was in San Diego, the handcuffs were on a little bit. Even though he got a lot more playing time, you never felt like he was going to be able to open up and run the show.
And that's a part, I think, what the problem with Quinn is right now is, you know, I've watched a little bit of Browns coverage here and, you know, checking on Brady, and a lot of complaints I've seen from Notre Dame fans and Brady Quinn fans and from even Browns fans is that when Quinn's been in the game, the offense has just been very vanilla. Now, I don't know if Mangini doesn't trust him to run it. I can't imagine that be the case because he ran Charlie Weiss's scheme, which is amongst the most complex in college, and he ran it very well. But, I mean, Quinn didn't throw a ball over 8 yards more than five or six times a game. And I know he doesn't have the strongest downfield arm, but the dude can chuck the ball a little bit. He's not Chad Pennington, you know what I'm saying? He can fire the ball a little bit, and he was checking down a lot, and a lot of the routes were just short. Now, I don't know if the checkdowns were coming because every time he snapped the ball, he had seven dudes rushing his face. It's very possible that offensive line has been awful. But, you know, it seemed like as soon as Derek Anderson came in the game, there was balls being thrown downfield. Now, I don't know if it's just a coaching decision, if it's coincidence. It wouldn't surprise me if they didn't realize that they weren't throwing downfield when Quinn was in the game. They are that inept. But and another problem I have is if you're coming in as Eric Mangini, new coach of a franchise like the Cleveland Browns, who has not really been much of anything to write home about since they've come back to the NFL, you're not making the playoffs this year. No one thought they were going to make the playoffs. Why don't you see if you have a franchise quarterback in Brady Quinn?
I mean, it's definitely mind-boggling when you kind of look at the rules or the steps that a new regime seems to take. It's play the young guy. You know, give him a chance, see what he's got. You know, if nothing's there, then at least you know. But you know what you have in Derek Anderson. He had 2 years to prove himself. 1 year he was a Pro Bowler. The next year he was terrible. So you know what you have there. But in Brady Quinn, you kind of have this unknown commodity, a guy who could have been the first pick in the NFL draft, and you're not playing him. It's definitely confusing for those of us watching from the outside. You know, maybe maybe something will happen now. It seems like they're making moves with the future in mind by getting rid of Braylon Edwards, so maybe we'll see Brady Quinn. But before we go to break here, if you're the Cleveland Browns, you have these two quarterbacks. Do you look at maybe trading one before the trading deadline, or do you keep them both?
I don't think that the market's going to be real. Well, the market's not going to be real high for either of them after the season. But I mean, you know, who's got a pressing need right now at a quarterback spot? I mean, bringing in a quarterback mid-season to learn the playbook and run the offense, it's not going to be a team that's a contender. Maybe Carolina takes a shot at one of them. I mean, Jake Delhomme has been just god-awful. Kyle Orton, he's clearly not the long-term answer in Denver, but is Derek Anderson or Brady Quinn the long-term answer in Denver? And would you make that move mid-season? Probably not. Those are the two teams that stick out to me that need some quarterback help. Maybe after Favre time after this season, when Brett's done on his magical mystery tour in Minnesota before he moves on to the next team that he unretires to go to, maybe one of them has an opening for one of these guys. I definitely don't see them both being in Cleveland beyond, you know, of draft time this coming year. I would prefer it be Quinn that's gone. But then again, if you get rid of Brady Quinn, you know, if Derek Anderson your franchise quarterback, I think you got to draft another one and try again. It doesn't make any sense when you have an unproven commodity that you haven't even tried.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. Let me throw out one name to you, Al Davis. You know, Derek Anderson is a big, strong quarterback, loves to push the ball downfield. Jamarcus Russell is proven every week he's not the answer quarterback. If you're the Raiders, don't you make that call?
Maybe. But, you know, I can't get inside Al Davis's head. That dude does things that I can't even fathom. What was that? Who was that safety they drafted this year, for God's sake?
Mike Mitchell.
Yeah, it's good Lord.
Yeah.
When you get me to say who that early, I can't fathom what he's doing. He might call about Derek Anderson. Derek Anderson is a slower version of Jamarcus Russell, if that's even possible. He's a more immobile target. He's Drew Brees without accuracy. He's just a statue back there. But, you know, maybe you call and ask, you know, do the Raiders have delusions that they're going to, you know, win more games this year without Jamarcus Russell? Do they just give Russell a shot like I'm advocating Cleveland does with Quinn, take the lumps, see what you got? I don't know. I'd prefer that for Russell's sake, too. I don't think he's the answer, but, again, you know, you got to give him a shot, I think. I don't think Oakland makes that call, but it's Al Davis. He might.
Yeah, it's definitely scary. Anytime you get Al Davis involved, you really have no idea what's going to happen. But that's going to take us to our last break. When we get back after the jump, we will be talking about our top 10 players as we reach the midpoint of the college football season. Eric and I will do a rundown from 10 to 1 of those top 10 players. So stick with us, and we'll be back.
More live fantasy sports radio than anyone on the planet. 7 continuous hours of football, baseball, basketball, and hockey action each Monday through Friday. Plus 7 hours of game day frenzy on Sunday. 30 shows in all from the best fantasy sportscasters in the business, like Craig Davis of FantasyFootball.com, the Audible Cecil Lammy, Paul Greco of Melnick and Greco Fantasy Sports, and the Fantasy Football guys Lyle Conkiel and Kevin Moore. The Fantasy Sports Channel, only on Blog Talk Radio. It's a schedule you can bet on.
And we're back at New Era Radio here for 30 more minutes tonight talking about the NFL draft, college football, and the National Football League. And I'm going to pat myself on the back because that was a good commercial.
That one wasn't bad. If you're just picking at random, I can get behind that.
You know I am. It's just I'm like a kid in a candy store. Something looks good, I'm hitting the button. So
make a note.
It works, yeah. I'm going to put a little star next to that one, and we'll come back to it next week. So, we're learning as we go here. But with only 30 minutes left in the show, one thing that we definitely want to get to is our bread and butter, and that's the NFL draft. We're gearing up for the 2010 draft every day, basically. We're making notes, watching film, breaking things down, getting ready for the draft. And we want to take some time to run through our top 10 players for the 2010 draft. And let's start it off at number 10. We've got a guy we talked about a little bit, at number 10, we've got a guy we have not talked about. We talked about his team a little bit, and that's Brandon Spikes, the inside linebacker from Florida. Eric, what are your thoughts on Spikes?
He's clearly, I think, probably the best linebacker in the draft. I think you could stick him just about anywhere. I think I'd prefer to see him inside, whether he be in a 3-4 or 4-3, just to kind of cover up, in a 4-3. I don't think he's going to translate outside. His foot speed isn't all that high. I think he can cover that up a little bit inside. He's by no means slow, but he's definitely not, you know, a weak side backer chasing anybody around or covering tight ends in the open. And then 3-4, we haven't seen him much blitzing on the outside from a 3-4. Obviously, we don't know what he's like as a pass rusher off the edge where he's currently playing in Florida. So I think you stick him inside just about anywhere, he's definitely a difference maker.
Yeah, and I definitely agree. He's a player who has kind of been overlooked, if you can believe it. You know, being a stud inside linebacker in the SEC, he just hasn't gotten much publicity, but he's a guy who I really like. Like you said, I think you can plug him inside on a 3-4 or a 4-3 defense. Now, he's a three-down player, in my opinion. He's someone who could drop in and play in coverage. He's also going to be able to step up and stop the run. So definitely a guy who I really like. I think one underrated aspect about him, you know, is his size. He's 6'3", almost 260 pounds. He definitely, you know, can step up and fill a hole. He's going to be someone who is valuable, you know, to a 4-3 team. If you can look at a guy, you know, like Patrick Willis playing in the 3-4 or DeMeco Ryans in the 4-3, I think those are pretty fair comparisons for spikes.
Yeah, absolutely. That's kind of where I project him at. You know, kind of a these new breed of inside linebackers, like you said, with Willis and with DeMeco Ryans, you can stick them just about anywhere on the field, but you put them in the middle, and that size and strength they have through the middle, and just, you know, they plug gaps so well, and it's just hard to move them.
Yeah, definitely agree with that. Moving along, one guy who we talked about a little bit at the beginning of the show, Trent Williams, the offensive tackle from Oklahoma. I kind of gave my thoughts on him earlier. You know, he's probably a right tackle at the next level. But one question I want to ask you with Williams, I mean, is he really the ninth best player, or is this more by default, kind of by attrition early on, since we don't have juniors in this class? What do you think about Williams?
I think with a lot of rankings you're going to see right now, and it's going to be prevalent even through our rankings here that we're going to go through, is a lot of it's still on reputation. You're going to see that a lot this early in the year. And then, you know, if you look back, if we could get archives of the guys we talked about early in the season last year on these radio shows and the guys that ended up getting drafted high, we probably weren't talking a lot about them. It's early in the season. He's a guy that's up this high. I think he still has a lot of time to prove himself. I think we'll see a lot what he has to offer, you know, come Senior Bowl week. And practices there. He's a player that I think could really help his stock there. Again, I think he's a right tackle. His footwork doesn't say left tackle to me at this time. He may be even, you know, he might even be more successful if you kick him inside to guard. But right now, I think, you know, rankings at this point in the season are kind of arbitrary. They're going to be changing a lot every week. And like you said, you know, he's a big time, he's a big name player. But right now, I think, you know, probably mostly reputation is where a lot of these guys are ranked.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, just case in point, last year we talked a lot about some teammates that Williams had, Phil Loadhole and Duke Robinson, who, you know, were living on reputation. They looked like guys who would be high draft picks. They were all Americans. We thought they would, you know, be big time top 10 players. But Loadhole, you know, fell to the second round, got picked by the Minnesota Vikings. So, you know, it's just proof that early on we're ranking guys by what we've seen, you know, as underclassmen and kind of their, you know, their senior reputation until we, you know, get four or five games in. You almost don't know what you've got with these guys.
And too, Matt, that place, that shows a lot of emphasis that comes on postseason. You know, we can evaluate so much, and NFL teams evaluate so much during the season, and, you know, we'll get guys they like, and we can get a loose top, you know, 60 to 100, but then you get into workouts, and it's pretty much all bets are off. You know, a guy can absolutely kill his stock, and you can have a guy come out of nowhere with workouts. You know, I remember back a couple of years, this is going way back to some of my earlier days following the draft, but when Sean Merriman's name first came up on a draft board, I think 75% of us went, who the hell is that?
Yeah, and it was the same year that DeMarcus Ware. We were thinking, a DN from Troy is going to be a top 10 pick. Are you kidding me?
And then you know, you see the workout numbers, and obviously the production speaks for itself. That's a lot of the things NFL teams place a lot of value in. And, you know, sometimes are they overblown? Yes. But at the same time, it's been a pretty good projector throughout the years when you look at those case in points.
Yeah. And now another player who is probably going to work out very well as an athlete, Tim Tebow at Florida. We talked about him a little bit before. We have him right now as the eighth best player in the draft, kind of as an athlete. And again, we understand Tebow is probably not a quarterback at the next level, but where do you see his value in the first round?
You know what? It's going to depend on really – I don't know where NFL teams see him, and that makes him – we've had this discussion for a couple of years now. He is the most difficult to project college player I can ever remember. I don't know where he's going to play.
if you're going to play him at fullback and H-back, is he a first-round pick? Is he better than other tight ends coming out? Do you pick him that high? I don't know. It's going to depend on one, if he commits to playing another position before we get to Senior Bowl week and workout time, and two, how he does in those workouts. If he says, if he still goes with the I'm a quarterback theory when we go to the Senior Bowl, I have no idea.
It's going to be, it's definitely going to be interesting. And I know that he has talked to some mobile, you know, quarterbacks like Steve Young to try to get their opinion on, you know, what to expect. But my feeling is, you know, Tebow is ranked 8th overall, almost out of respect, you know, for being a great college player and a phenomenal athlete, as you said earlier. But, you know, as of now, it's he's impossible to project because you don't know what position you're going to project him at. If we are asked to look at him as only a quarterback, you know, he's going to get knocked down probably to the 6th or 7th round where you're taking him as a projection. But if it's still open up and say, you know, yeah, I'll play other positions. I'll be a wildcat, you know, passer, runner, you know, a leader on this team. You know, that's where his value is going to be. But clearly it's not as, you know, a quarterback who's taken 60 snaps a game.
Absolutely. Man, you vote for one football show. We have to in a certain amount of tips. Don't let us talk about football. I think we've surpassed it. Going to try to pick up the pace now that we're past our two favorite topics, Tebow bashing and your Oklahoma bashing. Want to get in a couple more pretty quick here before we make some picks for next week because we know we love the picks. Number 7 right now, we got wide receiver Brandon LaFell out of LSU. My personal thoughts are it's maybe a little high for LaFell. I think wide receivers, if you're going to draft them in the top 10, they have to be game changers unless you're the Oakland Raiders. If I'm drafting a wide receiver in the top 10, I want them to be able to change the game. Do you see that from LaFell, Matt?
You know, I haven't. LSU hasn't had that consistent of quarterback play during LaFell's time there. They're starting to get that this year, but I think it's something that I like to point out. Every year a senior wide receiver comes in and he's ranked high, you know, this time of year, and he falls to the second round. And I think that could be LaFell this year. Once we get more tape, once we're able to evaluate him thoroughly, I think we'll have a better read on it. But I just don't see him being a game changer. He doesn't blow you away with speed or size. I don't think he would be the 7th pick if the draft were tomorrow.
No, I agree with you on that. And like I said, you know, you want a game changer there. And I think maybe workouts, again, another player workouts is going to tell us a lot. Because, you know, like you said, quarterback play at LSU is not consistent. It's hard to judge a guy when, you know, they're getting by in a running game and not throwing the ball very much. So he's another guy we're going to have to wait until maybe after the season until we can really determine his true value.
Yeah, and moving on past LaFell, we get to a guy who is going to be kind of like you said, you know, when Sean Mann was first mentioned, a lot of people might not know, but Arthur Jones, the defensive tackle out of Syracuse, a Big East player. We like him because he is a versatile guy. He can play, you know, the under tackle in the 4-3, or he can kick outside and play end in the 3-4. He's built a lot like a Richard Seymour, 6'3", 6'4", 300 pounds, a lean player, but he's also got some quickness. We read one report that he was clocked at 4.9 flat in 40 before the season. So Jones definitely has a lot of potential. He's number 6 right now on our board, which is probably higher than you're going to see him at other places. What are your thoughts on Jones?
It might be a little high. This is one of those projection boom or bust type picks right now. You know, and it's hard to see, too, because he plays for Syracuse, that if I'm an offensive coordinator and I'm taking on Syracuse, my entire blocking scheme is designed to keep Arthur Jones out of my backfield. So, you know, he's probably taking on double teams 90% of the time. So it's hard to see. I think, you know, in the measurables, NFL teams love that. He's a guy who's going to be, I think, hopefully a solid first-round pick if he's anywhere consistent with these workouts we've heard. And, you know, he continues to show his versatility. That's another thing teams really covet.
Yeah, absolutely. And with the 3-4 becoming so popular across the league, I think some team is going to take a flyer on him, just like they did Tyson Jackson, who went number 3 to the Chiefs last year. Jumping ahead, trying to get these guys out of the way quickly, we've got Taylor Mays, the free safety slash linebacker slash everything from USC. What do you think about Mays and his productivity at the next level?
You know, I'm a little bit disappointed he hurt himself, and he, of course, naturally is probably going to play in the Notre Dame game because that's what happens with USC players. He's a big, imposing dude in that backfield. I don't think he plays free safety at the NFL level. I could see him at strong safety. Or, you know, maybe you suggested this to me. Maybe he kicks down the linebacker. I know he can run. He can cover.
Is he a safety in the NFL? I can't answer that right now. It's going to depend on, I think, defensive scheme and what he's asked to do. Are you going to ask him to play deep center field? I don't know if that's going to work, but the guy's an absolute genetic freak. He's a rare athlete. You got to find a place for him somewhere on the football field.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, one player who he reminds me of, albeit a little bit more athletic, is Thomas Davis, who played safety at Georgia back in the 2004 draft, I believe. A guy who was just a lights-out hitter, wasn't great in coverage. Mays kind of has an advantage there, but he's moved down to playing weak side linebacker for the Carolina Panthers. And has had a solid career, but I think Mays has more potential at the position. He's just more of an impact player. But like you mentioned, I could see Mays bumping down and playing weak side linebacker, especially you know in a cover two scheme where he's going to be in the flats, taking on tight ends and backs. I definitely like him there. Next on our list, number four, Russell Okung, the 6'5", 300-pound left tackle for Oklahoma State. Some scouting services have him as the number one overall player in the draft, while others have him as the second or third best tackle. What's your feeling on Okung?
I think right now he's probably the best tackle we have. We haven't seen anyone start to emerge and jump out yet. You know, it's going to be a couple weeks before we start to make these determinations. You know, last year the kid that just got drafted from Baylor, his name escapes me. Help me here, Matt.
Jason
offensive
Smith.
Tackle. I'm sorry?
No, Jason Smith.
Yeah, there we go. It's way too common of a name for me to remember. But, you know, it was around this time last year where we started hearing about him, and he eventually kind of shot his way up. I think we're going to see that start to happen and these players start to sort themselves out. Right now, Okung's the best. He's a fantastic pass blocker on the outside. Some teams covet because you got to keep that multi-million dollar quarterback upright if you're going to be successful. You know, right now he's the best. Will he be there at the end? I'm not sure. I think he definitely has the talent. He's very fundamentally sound. So we'll see. I think he's probably a solid top 15 pick no matter what happens.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you there. You know, like you said last year, it'd be interesting to see. We were talking about Michael Orr was our number one overall player for most of the season last year, and he, you know, fell down to the end of the first round as a Baltimore Raven now. But it's interesting, you know, how, like you said, a workout or one bad game can bump these guys down the list. Okung has been very consistent. He plays in a pro-style offense, so I think his game translates very well. And like you said, seeing him around the top 15, even after we, you know, throw some juniors in here, I think that's where he's going to stay. Number three on our list is probably the only true defensive end that we have listed in our top 25, and that's Greg Hardy out of Ole Miss. Hardy's been a big name ever since he came to Oxford. He's been a great player, a little bit overshadowed by Jevon Snead. Hardy's definitely a talent. Is he overrated at number three?
He could be, probably. Like you said, you know, we don't. We're just putting up numbers on reputation and just trying to get a rough idea at this point. I think he's definitely, like you said, the only true, you know, 43 defensive end out there right now. That's going to be an impact, at least early top end of the draft. Which means, you know, unless some junior comes out of nowhere and blows him up and takes that spot over, he's going to be a high draft pick simply because a team that runs that defense is going to need a player. He much carries that defense though. That is not a real good Ole Miss football team. I don't care what the rankings said. And he's pretty much carrying that defense by himself. He's a lot like we mentioned with Arthur Jones earlier. He's probably eating a lot of blocks right now. And another guy that I think you're going to see, I personally think you're going to see him put up some freakish workout numbers.
Yeah, absolutely. Expect a 4-5, 5 or lower out of Hardy. And that's at 6'4", 265. So it's going to be impressive watching him work out. He reminds me a lot of Brian Arakpo, just a little bit heavier, a little bit stouter against the run, but the same kind of just athletic prowess. It's just phenomenal to watch.
Hopefully some 4-3 team doesn't decide to make him a linebacker like Arakpo, right?
Yeah, it's terrible to watch. It's just sad.
That defies logic. Maybe we'll get into that one next week. All right, number two. You going to take on the first name, or am I?
Go for it.
Natomokong Sue? I'm going for it.
I tried earlier.
Defensive tackle out of Nebraska. We need to call Nebraska's PR people and get a proper pronunciation on that one.
Absolutely.
Defensive tackle out of Nebraska. You mentioned it earlier when we were talking about maybe some players for the 49ers to look at the top end of the draft when they're using Carolina's pick. This kid, versatile, is the one word that comes to mind. He can play pretty much anywhere along a defensive line and make an impact.
Absolutely. You know, and he's been a player to watch throughout his career in Nebraska. But like I said before, watch them tomorrow night against Missouri, who has a very good offense. And number 93 is going to take over the game. It's just phenomenal to watch. I can't wait to see it happen. And I'm already petitioning for him to go to the 49ers early in the first round. So, you know, if Jed York is listening, there we go. Just send the pick in now. And that gets us to our number one player. And I know when I sent you my list earlier this week, you fired back at me, "Are you serious?" with the number one pick overall. Our number one player, who I'm sure everyone's wondering, why wasn't he mentioned before? The Colt McCoy, quarterback for the University of Texas. I know you completely disagree with this. You're shaking your head as we sit here. What are your thoughts on McCoy?
System quarterback. I want to see him in workouts. I want to see him at senior week. I want to see him throw a hard out route. He's got a lot of that moxie factor we always talk about. There's no doubt about that. And the kid's a heck of a ball player. I want to see the arm strength, and I want to see him do it from a professional offense.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, everyone could agree with that. I'd like to see him play under center. I've been one of his biggest critics early on this year because it doesn't seem like he's following through on his passes. The out route's floating. He's throwing a lot of high balls. You know, we have heard that he's been sick early this year, but having the flu shouldn't affect your accuracy as much as it has McCoy. Now, kind of the underlying theme on that, he's still a 70% passer, which does kind of point to maybe he's a system player. But Mark Sanchez, who a lot of people labeled as a system quarterback, is doing pretty well in the NFL right now. And I actually think they're similar players, you know, agile, mobile, out of the pocket, kind of hard-nosed leaders. So I see a lot of similarities there.
Yeah, Mark Sanchez's system was a professional system, though, so there's that.
There is that. You definitely have a point there. But McCoy didn't stand
and Jimmy Clausen can complete 70% of his passes on one foot. But we'll have that discussion next week. I know Culture Boy, and like I said, he's probably going to be a first-round pick, and it's deserved. You know, he's been the leader of that team, and like you said, like, you know, he does. He leads, and guys follow him. But that I want to see him hit his receiver in the numbers a few times this season. He's looked off.
Yeah, he absolutely has. And at Colorado this Saturday, then at Oklahoma, in Dallas, and then at Missouri. So three big games where they need to step up, and you know, McCoy needs to get back on track for them to win all three games. So definitely a nice little stretch for McCoy. We'll get to evaluate what he's all about. We've got about 12 minutes left, and I know we both want to get to our games of the week, so let's jump right into that. We'll kick it off with your game, Michigan at Iowa. Tell me about Tate Forcier.
You mean Mini Tebow? Boy, did Notre Dame's defense manage to make that kid look like a Heisman Trophy winner. Good Lord. He's got a lot of that moxie factor we talked about. He don't run around like he's 175 pounds, that's for sure. Someone's going to ring his bell before too long. You know, he had a little bit of a rough week against Michigan State. That was a game Michigan probably should have won. I think maybe teams are starting to figure out how to scheme to beat him. And Iowa's defense is very tough. You know, they went into Happy Valley, and they laid one on Penn State. My only question is, can Iowa manage to beat anyone other than Penn State in a convincing manner? They've had some struggles with some really bad teams. I got Michigan winning this one.
Michigan big, or is it close?
It's going to be close. I think Iowa's defense is going to keep it close, but I think Michigan's going to pull it out. I think Mini Tebow is going to lead them to another one.
We're going to have to, you know, register trademark that.
You can trademark Mini Tebow. That's fine.
That's pretty original.
week number two here, I'm looking, I'm going to take Georgia and Tennessee as my number two game, Matt. And reason being, this is just a classic SEC battle. You got to love good old SEC football. And there's two reasons I want to watch this game. Number one is Eric Berry. That dude is just phenomenal to watch. I wish I could get an Eric Berry ISO cam. He's just fun. I need to see him play in person, I think, just to get a feel of how fantastic he is to watch during a football game. And reason number two is Lane Kiffin. This dude talked a bunch of smack coming into Tennessee. Florida whooped him. UCLA stuck it to him. Can he beat Georgia in a down year in Neyland Stadium? I sure hope so, because he ran his mouth a lot.
State. What are your thoughts on this one?
Georgia Tech and Florida State. And by the way, I got a note for Notre Dame later, and I'm going to pick one more game at Notre Dame's place, too. I'm picking four. You're picking four, right?
I'm picking four, yeah.
All right, I'm going to pick four. I got a note from Notre Dame later, too. But Georgia Tech, Florida State, business at hand. Jonathan Dwyer and that triple option offense. Boy, I hated Paul Johnson when he was at Navy because I had to watch that garbage. But now it's fun because he's got athletes. And Jonathan Dwyer's a fantastic kid to watch run the ball. Man, he runs downhill. He's going to be fun to watch in the NFL. And the intriguing story to me in this one is the Florida State trustees are trying to out Bobby Bowden. They want him gone. And if he loses this game to Georgia Tech, I don't know that they're going to be able to hold him off. I think he's probably going to go. You know, they got Jimbo Fisher waiting in the wings. This game could very well be the nail in Bobby Bowden's coffin.
And you would hope to not see such a storied coach go out that way. But, you know, Bowden probably needs to announce his retirement before things get out of hand down there. So it's definitely an intriguing storyline. And you've got me anxious to hear your Notre Dame note.
I'm going to get the one more game first. I'm going to do LSU Florida too. And I'm picking, as I said earlier, I'm picking Timmy Hero, Timmy Jesus, to come in out of nowhere and ride in on his white stallion. Florida's going to win this one. They're going to do it convincingly. If Tebow plays. I'm putting a contingency in that. If Tebow doesn't play, I want this thing voided.
Not a John Brantley fan.
No, but he's going to be a fine quarterback in that system. But, I mean, come on, he's not Tim Tebow.
Yeah, thankfully for John Brantley and his parents. Okay, Notre Dame, no game this week, but I know you want to mention them.
I got to get my cardiac kids. They're the Fighting Irish. They're taking years off my life. Really just one quick note for anyone who watched the game, and we'll get into some of these hype players, some underclassmen, and, you know, Notre Dame lost Michael Floyd, who was going to be a fantastic professional football player, and they still got Kyle Rudolph, tight end. He's going to be a fantastic football player in the NFL. There's another kid Notre Dame's got out there right now, number 23. He's a wide receiver. His name's Golden Tate. When this kid gets the ball in his hands, he's absolutely electric. It's amazing to watch a wide receiver run like that. He runs like a tailback, and he's a tailback that's very hard to tackle. And I got a quick message from Flynn Hill. Anybody who listened last year knows that Flynn Hill has been on the Golden Tate hype train for about 3 years now. And Flynn just wanted to send a message out to the people over at Rivals.com that he has a body part that they can do something to for their views about Golden Tate. He was right and they were wrong.
And he was. You know, Flynn used to be our high school recruiting specialist, and he called it. He had Golden Tate as, I believe, his number one player. And he told me, he said, there's this little running back out of Memphis. You're going to love him once you see him play. I said, okay. You know, Rivals had him as a 3- or 4-star player. And you know, 3 years later, Golden Tate is just tearing up college football. So
yeah, I dare you to tackle that kid.
Yeah, no, it's not happening.
All right, let's get on to your games. I'm done offering sexual favors to Flynn Hill, current FIFARivals.com. Anyways, Matt, your first pick, you got the battle for the North, Nebraska and Missouri. Both teams in the top 25, going to be a good matchup. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it is a good matchup. Missouri's pro-style spread offense against the Nebraska defense. Nebraska needs to be healthy to come in at Columbia and win this game on Thursday night. It's going to be a little chilly, probably in the 50s. The lights are going to be on. Missouri plays very well at home, but I'm still going to take Nebraska by 7, just because of the inexperience of the Missouri offense. Give Blaine Gabbert a couple years, and this is, you know, an elite team. But as of now, they're not ready to compete with Nebraska.
And that Gabbert kid's going to be something special. There's no doubt about that.
Game number two, kicking it down to the SEC, game that will kind of rival the Georgia-Tennessee game, and that's Alabama against Ole Miss. Jevon Snead needs to show up big. People were riding his coattails before the season, calling him a potential number one pick, but he hasn't shown it so far this year. If Snead is going to be a first-round pick in the 2010 NFL draft, he needs to come up big against Nick Saban and the Alabama defense. Alabama has 3 or 4 future first-round players on that D. Number 3 Alabama going to Oxford, Mississippi. They need a big win this weekend to potentially jump Florida or Texas.
Yeah, what do you think there, Matt? You taking Alabama on that one?
It's a tough game for me. I had written down Alabama, and then I hesitated, but I'm going to stick with my original pick. I like Alabama. If Snead can get on track, that game could be a lot closer than people expect.
I said it earlier, and I'll stick by it. This is not a very good Ole Miss football team. They got Jevon Snead. They got Greg Hardy. And I think that's a lot of what we've seen problem with Jevon Snead. Boy, he doesn't have anybody to throw to. Maybe that's just me making excuses because I ranked him so highly in the preseason and thought so highly of him. I want to see it from him, too. Just because there's nobody to throw to doesn't mean you have to make bad decisions. I'd like to see him play a little bit better, but, yeah, it's Alabama running away, I think.
Game number three, a biggie showdown, West Virginia at Syracuse. Now, neither team's ranked. There's not a whole lot of hype on either side, but there's two seniors who we want to watch in this game. That's Jarrett Brown, the quarterback for West Virginia, stepped in for Pat White. More of a pro-style quarterback, though. Yes, he's mobile. Yes, he can get out of the pocket, but he has a much better arm than Pat White did. For Syracuse, the guy we mentioned earlier, our number six overall player, Arthur Jones, the big defensive tackle in the middle there. Like Eric mentioned, watch the West Virginia offensive linemen doubling Jones. They're smaller linemen. They run a zone scheme. So it'll be interesting to see what Jones can do getting into the gap and kind of creating havoc. I like West Virginia in this one, which is no surprise. Syracuse is a horrible, horrible football team right now. But, you know, if anything, you get to watch Greg Paulus play quarterback, so that's exciting.
That'll be entertaining. I think Greg Paulus made a terrible choice. He could have been Brady Quinn's successor, but he's had to go play point guard at Duke, and he was a terrible point guard. Good call, Greg.
Good call. Yeah, absolutely a good call. my final game of the week, of course, as is tradition, Colorado at Texas, Saturday night, 7 p.m., number two Texas. I don't see anything stopping them from running over Colorado. Now, there is a little bit of bad blood between these teams because of Darnell Scott, who was the number one rated running back 2 years ago from Texas, chose to go to Colorado. A lot of controversy, rumors of maybe some under-the-table favors being exchanged. But look for Texas to come in Saturday night, you know, ready to hurt Colorado. I think they might not have anything to prove, but there's going to be a chip on their shoulder. And Mack Brown, you know, he's the kind of coach to remind them that they were spurned, you know, because someone wanted to go to Colorado. So there's some extra incentive for the number two team in the country to go play a Big 12 rival.
And I don't think, I mean, it's got to eat at Max Crow because, I mean, Mac doesn't lose a recruit from Texas ever. He's got the easiest job in recruiting in football, man. He just sits back and waits for him.
Yeah, I mean, it's built-in recruiting. You know, being the coach at LSU, Florida, USC, and Texas, you just can't mess it up. It's the recruits are there for the taking. You just have to reel them in.
Yeah, pretty much.
But that is our picks of the week. We've got about 2 minutes to spare here on our first show of the 09 season. Any closing thoughts, Eric?
Yeah, vote Jimmy Clausen for Heisman. Somebody start Brady Quinn.
Never shy about pitching Notre Dame love.
Just watch the game tapes, Matt. You'll see.
70% passer. He did look impressive last week. I still like Jake Locker from Washington. I know that's something that we'll probably get into next week, talking about these two very impressive junior quarterbacks right now.
Absolutely. I think a little preview for next week's show here on our way out. I think next week Matt and myself, you know, we both like to scout quarterbacks. That's what we like to do, and we both like to think we're good at it. So I think we're going to put a little something together next week and, you know, maybe scout the best guys that you could be hearing drafted in the first couple rounds of quarterback. Matt, what do you think?
I think that sounds wonderful. One name that I'll throw out as we're running away, Matt Ryan. Who called
it? You got that one right. I did not. You did.
I've got that one. There is an article floating around where I said he would be a Pro Bowler as a rookie. I'm just saying.
You find me that link, Matt. I'll publish it.
We will post it. It will be posted. But thanks, everyone, for joining us on show number one of New Era Radio. Check us out next Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. For Eric Loomis, this is Matt Miller.